No intro music, no sponsors, because we get right into it here on Uncle Cardboard's Limited Jamboree. I'm your host, Jake Brown, a.k.a. Uncle Cardboard, and thank you, my little Jambrews, for checking out our inaugural episode. I also sincerely hope Jambrews does not stick around. Jamborinos, Jam Nation, I've got nothing. nothing except for my primer on exactly what to do in Crimson Vow Sealed. Initially, this wasn't something I was going to do, but the generic play your bombs, play more counters, and discard spells advice that I've read just wasn't going to cut it if you're going to go to Vegas. And as somebody who has run over 30 sealed leagues at this point, and has seen just how brutal this format is, I couldn't let them do that to you. If you're like, why is this guy talking about Vegas? It's because there's a big old tournament there this weekend, and the sealed event has a pretty decent prize pool. So if you're somebody that's going to pony up the cash to ride that bull, a truly mixed metaphor, I wanted to make sure that you had as much info as possible. Let's start with pool evaluation, which I think is like super basic day one kind of stuff, but it's never been more important than in Vow. When I have my packs, I'm doing three things. Checking my bombs, checking my colorless cards, and then counting the literal number of cards in each color. Let's work backwards on this. So if I only have, say, 10 cards in a color, they either all need to slap or I'm out because of how synergistic this set was designed to be. Essentially, each color has three core concepts that drive how it wants to do the damn thing, and it's critical that you understand where there's overlap in the concepts, because I'm finding that your 22nd and 23rd cards can be rough. And that's especially true if you have to be in a color that's pretty shallow, but you have to play it because you have a bomb or two. So let's take black, for example. Its themes are blood, exploit, and life gain. Blood and Exploit pair pretty well together because sometimes you can discard a persistent specimen to a blood token for value, or pitch a late Doom Dissenter because you can't exploit it on turn 1 million. If you're in a Dimir Exploit deck, you're able to pitch Disturbed Creatures. This isn't necessarily what you want to do, but you would rather have minor synergies rounding out your deck than a generic body. On the flip side, Life Gain is great, but it doesn't really care about Blood or Exploit. Green wants to train, self-mill, or play wolves. Your wolves tend to be aggressive bodies that can help with train, and I think that self-mill is broadly a trap. The payoffs are like a TV residual check for a penny, not so great, and decking is a real possibility in this format. That said, I don't think wolf training is where you want to be. It's just your best option if you have to pair two of these, you know, broader concepts together. Blue is pretty straightforward, as exploiting your disturbed cards is a perfect value engine, and the third concept of self-mill is okay to complement disturb, although not one I'm too wild about. So if I'm ranking it, it's exploit slash disturbed with a little self-mill at number one, disturbed slash self-mill at two. Red wants to cast wolves, cast spells, or generate blood tokens. Here, you'd think a spells deck would naturally love the filtering of blood tokens, but it's an incredibly hard deck to pull off outside of draft. So in sealed, blood and wolves are your best pairing somehow. Finally, white is gaining life, disturbing creatures, and training, and that's pretty much the order of importance I have it in. Training has been a bust. So I'm fine using lifelink to extend games so that I can get full value out of my disturb auras, but this is the least synergistic of all the groupings. So, knowing this, we can grab our pile of white cards and usually toss out everything that says training, and then it's important to ask, what am I left with, and is it enough? Next, I'm looking to see what artifacts and colorless cards I have that are playable. Foreboding Statue and Honored Heirloom are going to support my splashes in any color combination. Ceremonial Knife can help me if I'm aggressive or evasive. And Boarded Window, Dollhouse of Horrors, and Investigator's Journal tell me I want a longer game. Regardless, I'm going to have an idea of raw numbers that I can use to bolster my bomb-centered strategy. Then I'm looking very hard at my bombs. How much commitment do they take to make them work? So cards like Helena and Elena, Partners, Wedding Announcement, Angie, Maid of Dishonor, ugh, Welcoming Vampire, Geralf, Visionary Stitcher, and Edgar, Charmed Groom, all ask very little of you, And also apologies if I butchered any of those names, but hey, I have been stuck playing digitally for the last 2 years. Anyway, back to the analysis. These cards are generically good without needing a ton of synergy, and they only require a single pip to get into your deck. So sure, you'd like to cast Welcoming Vampire on curve or have some bigger butts for Geralf, but you're happy to cast them regardless. Real deal bombs that need a little more work or mana commitment include Enrika, Domnathi, Everbrook Caretaker, Toxrill the Corrosive, Dreadfeast Demon, Cemetery Desecrator, Sorin the Mirthless, Volatile Arsonist, Hullbreaker Horror, Dreamshackle Geist, Blood Vial Purveyor, Olivia's Attendance, and Faithbound Judge. Now that list rounds out the top 20 bombs, by the way. With these, I'm trying to ensure that they're at the core of what I'm doing and am building around appropriately, or I'm just very firmly in these colors. So if I open an Avabruk Caretaker, I need to make sure that I'm hitting double green every game, and hopefully by turn 5 with a little bit of ramp. If I'm playing Hullbreaker Horror, I'm doing whatever I can to survive the early game and hit land drops. It's not good enough to play your bombs. You need to play to them. Now that we know our enemies, it's important to know how to destroy them. You need to have plans for each of them and know exactly what games 2 and 3 look like post-board. So let's go back to Avabruk Caretaker as an example. I consider the two best sweepers in By Invitation Only and Path of Peril must-plays in this environment because they're the only clean answers to Caretaker having Hexproof. Otherwise, you're stuck trying to clear the rest of their board and then getting them to sacrifice it to Rot-Tide Gargantua, which, good luck. But those are only answers in Orzhov. If I'm Gruul, I'm really trying to lower my curve to get under the Caretaker and maybe even adding Wedding Invitation to get lethal past their beefy defenses once all these counters start coming out. Caretaker decks can be weak to flyers, so I'm more inclined to board in a Wanderlight Spirit or Griff Rider to try and go over for lethal. Caretaker can definitely be countered, so if you're running blue, I might be looking at playing better at instant speed and bringing in a Geist Light Snare I wouldn't normally be very excited about. If we're talking about Hullbreaker Horror, it can't be countered, and please do not try and counter it. So I'm holding up my Bleed Dry or Fierce Retribution and praying they don't have Alchemist's Retrieval. Basically, my point being that you should be able to attack each of these creatures and know how in advance. You should have a sideboard plan in advance, period. My final thought on building broadly is that most decks want 18 lands in this format. I found that the best decks are playing red or black or both, and thus have access to blood tokens, which are freaking key. If you're flooding, pitch your lands to them. If you aren't hitting lands for a splash, pitch your splash. These tokens reward high-level play because they force you to make tough decisions at times, so I would use them to your advantage. And even without blood, there are tons of ways to spend mana in every deck that you're excited to be in, and removal tends to be expensive, so you want to ensure that you're not missing land drops. And missing land drops is so bad in this format because you can't afford to be catching up when their bombs start hitting the table, as many of them do want a response at instant speed. If you're tapped out casting a 4-drop while they're playing their 6-drop, you're just so far behind. I'll also note that people are being fairly protective of their bombs at this point, so flooding doesn't feel as awful as they'll usually put you on an answer instead of bad luck. Just try not to be exasperated when a good bluff will slow your opponent down. All right, now onto the decks, and I understand your pool is what it is, but I do want to discuss where I think there are some opportunities and where the traps are. Aggro broadly does pretty badly in sealed, but I honestly haven't hated it so far when my pool supports it. Ideally, you're in Rakdos, but then I like Boros, Azorius, and Celestia in that order. But curve is your biggest consideration, and on top of having a minimum of 6 2 drops, you're looking for 1 or 2 1 drops. We officially live in the age of 1 drops now, and Lantern Bearer, Traveling Minister, Snarling Wolf, and even Voldaren Epicure, or Kirkland Brand Thraben Inspector as I call it, are cards that I'm actively hoping for at common. Now this is not an 18 land deck, by the way, But you want a super low curve and cheap interaction, whether that's removal in Flame Blessed Bolt or Abrade, a combat trick in Massive Might, or bounce in Alchemist's Retrieval. The reason aggro works is because removal is expensive and clunky at the same time. You don't care about a Grizzly Ritual when you're beating down this hard, but Ritual is a card that any black deck will play at least one of, I've found. I'm higher on combat tricks than I usually would be because creatures don't have a ton of defensive speed here, with only a couple having toughness higher than 4 before turn 5 that your opponent would actually want to play. Your tricks can help you win a quick combat, plus continue to build your board. By the time they think they can stabilize, it's usually too late. Now, speaking of defensive speed, let's talk about the Butts deck. I cannot in good conscience recommend Golgari Toughness. Catapult Fodder is an okay card to buy time until you can cast a Flourishing Hunter, but this deck really has trouble coming together in draft, where it's regularly offered to you on a plate. If you're in green-black, you're in it for the value. I'm also down on Simic Self-Mill, as I mentioned earlier. These games can go very long. I'm legitimately nervous about decking in a deck that I'm playing Millipedes, Vilespun Spiders, and Mulch. Similar to draft, I think it's okay to play a spider as a solid value creature that you can just cash in later, but I'm going to be legitimately mad if I'm stuck playing Simic in Vegas. Our final trap comes from green-white, as the Training Day deck just never found its Denzel. It's mostly the fault of your two drops here. So Parishblade Trainee has a lot of promise, but you're usually not training with it until turn 4, when a 2-3 isn't the strongest offensive threat. The payoffs for going wide don't exist. Your signpost uncommon gives keywords instead of +1/+1 counters, and human payoffs aren't abundant or particularly good at doing anything other than drawing you more mediocre cards. I'm trying to avoid Celestia when possible. Since you're going to build whatever colors you have, I want to focus on a few things that are broadly high priorities for me. First, flying and menace are both exceptional keywords here. I've had busted starts that simply just couldn't keep up with a Heron of Hope or Cruel Witness that I couldn't interact with. Rakdos is great because you can curve Fearful Villager into Bloodcrazed Socialite into Falconwrath Celebrants and just take a 2-for-1 whenever you want with a well-timed Sure Strike, or remove a blocker to leave them without a profitable response. Second, I don't mind long games, but green is the best color at facilitating them, with Flourishing Wolf and Brambleworm helping you truly use your life total as a resource before you turn the corner. I'm ideally trying to be in a 3-color deck at minimum if I'm playing green, but it doesn't much matter which 3 as long as the colors have bombs in them. I'll just note that Abzan has nice synergy with these life gainers at your top end. Third, I cannot remember a format that punished loose play more than Vow. You need to be thinking about day and night, as there is no software that's going to track it for you. Wasting good removal early on in a medium threat will lead to you dying handily by a bomb later, so knowing when to pull the trigger becomes paramount. What are you willing to counter? How well do you know your outs when sacrificing blood tokens to dig for them? What bombs are in your opponent's colors, and are they playing in a way that tips them? These are all questions you need to constantly be thinking about. Fourth, all generic rules apply about bombs. Play them, counter them, try and make your opponent discard them. In terms of counters, Siphon Essence is my favorite because it's the only blue card that leaves behind blood, but it's worthless against really powerful cards like Dollhouse or Wedding Announcement, so sometimes it's correct to side it out. Syncopate's Exile Clause and Wash Away both play nicely against Azorius, but the latter can just be cleaved to become cancel if need be. Geist Snare is great in Azorius, where it's usually a mana leak, but again, not too wild about Geist Snare. Of all the discard options, I'm higher on Dreadfugue than Aim for the Head in the main deck, as a coercion effect always allows you to see their hand and nab something. Aim, I don't mind on the play in games 2 or 3, or anytime they have an interesting zombie that I've seen game 1. Ideally, I'm not playing both. Lastly, you need a plan. I know, great advice, Uncle Cardboard, but everyone is expecting your Haymaker in this format. If you're hoping to play a bomb and just watch balloons fall from the ceiling, well, I am so sorry, but it's not happening. In weaker pools, you need to prioritize cards like Blood Fountain, Undead Butler, Courier Bat, and Edgar's Awakening in black as ways to get your bombs back. Retrieve and Witness the Future are also considerations in green and blue, respectively. Okay, now that you have all that information, what can you do with it? There are three things that I cannot recommend enough. First, get on Magic Online and play at least one competitive league, or even better, a limited preliminary. These are best of three matches that are as close to the real deal as possible online. Arena is okay as a fallback, but again, I'd rather be on MTGO. Second, generate some sealed pools on draftsim.com and really think about how you'd build them. Then, put yourself on a clock. Get to the point where you can consistently build confidently in 5 minutes or less, and you're going to feel like freaking Neo by the time you're in Vegas. And third, if you are going to Vegas, do some actual paper-sealed side events. I sat down the other day and played Commander with a friend just to get back in the habit of playing paper Magic. I don't think that there's any substitute for playing these games, like actually playing out the games as well, and seeing how game-warping the Bombs of Vow can be. It'll teach you a lot of respect for them when you're facing down a Hullbreaker and a couple Dreadfeast demons. Okay, that's it for the very first episode of Uncle Cardboard's Limited Jamboree. Check out my live streams at twitch.tv/UncleCardboard. Say hi if you see me in Vegas, and go to linktr.ee/UncleCardboard for everything else. This has been your favorite uncle. Good night, kids.
Uncle Cardboard's Limited Jamboree is written, recorded, and produced by Jake Brown, with music by Liquid. Please send all inquiries to Jake at UncleCardboard.com, and be good to each other.